The woods don't lie. They don't exaggerate. They don't misremember. And they sure as hell don't care whether you believe in what's watching you from between the trees or not. Tonight, I'm joined by a man who has spent nearly a decade deep in that darkness, Chris Reinhardt, a researcher who doesn't dabble. He commits. Since 2016, he's traded with Sasquatch, sifted through freshly broken branches and still warm tracks, found mutilated remains that defy natural explanation, and even blacked out helicopter followed the activity right to his doorstep. He's trekked to Snellgrove Lake with Doug Hychek, appeared on These Woods Are Haunted, worked inside the Bigfoot Hum Project, and gathered story after story from Americans who live so close to these creatures that they no longer wonder if monsters are real. They just wonder when they'll show up again. Chris isn't chasing fame. He doesn't try to cash in. He just follows the evidence, the patterns, the instincts, and the things most people pretend just aren't out there. Tonight, we open the door to that world, and once you look inside, you may never feel alone in the woods or your backyard ever again. I'm Dave Schrader, and welcome to the Paranormal 360. Chris Reinhardt, our guest on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I'm very excited to be here.
It's great to have you. Talk to me a little bit about a few of the things that we mentioned in the opening that I'm not familiar with. The Bigfoot Hum Project. What is that?
So over the last, like you said, I've been doing this for about a decade now. And I had Sasquatch activity outside my house involving a hummingbird feeder. And they would come nightly and they would either pour the fluid out or they would drink it. We couldn't figure out. This was my wife that was experiencing this. This was probably about 2 years ago. And every night they would come and they would pluck the flowers off the hummingbird feeder and they would throw them all over, but we didn't know what it was. Maybe it could have been a bear. We couldn't figure it out. And after the fourth day, my wife came in and she goes, "This is exactly what she says. You tell your friends I want my flowers back." I'm like, "What are you talking your flowers back?" She goes, "Four of my flowers out of the five are missing now. So I want you to go outstairs," because she knows what goes on. She's right by my side with all this. And she says, "Tell them I want my flowers back." I said, "All right, Maria." I said, "I'm not sure if this is going to work or not, but I'll go out to the woods and I will tell them to bring your flowers back." So I went outside and said, "Listen, guys, Maria wants me to tell you she wants her flowers back." And then I came back in the house, and then nightly activities came. The next morning came, and she comes out. She feeds every animal in the world.
Okay.
She comes back inside, and she goes, "You're not going to believe this." And I said, "There's not too much that surprises me anymore." She goes, "All the flowers came back, and they were put in a nice little pile right below the hummingbird feeder. And not a single drop of fluid was dropped or drank or spilt that night." That just blew my mind. And that's part of the story that involves the helicopter and everything like that. So I reached out to my friend, M.K. Davis, and he's pretty well known in the cryptid field. And we were talking about it. He goes, "You know, Chris, I don't think Sasquatch love hummingbirds." He says, "I had the same thing going in my house. They would come every night and they would break open the hummingbird feeder and throw the flowers all over. And finally, I just stopped putting the hummingbird feeder out." So I'm an investigator. I'm trying to get down to what makes these guys tick. So I put one and one together and I Googled it and I went to the library and so. And then I came up with the hummingbird, when they're in flight, they make a 40 hertz hum. Just regular 40 hertz. So I started researching and I started using it. And I actually brought them in, three of something, throwing stones at us at a property that I go to. And they were surrounded us after we call blasted it. So I actually told Doug Hychek, the creator of Monster Quest, he's a good friend of mine, about it. He says, "Chris, you're never going to believe this." He says, "Hold on, I got to call a friend of mine." So he calls his friend up and he's like, Dave Ellis from the Olympic Project. He's well known for doing audio with all this. And he says, "Dave, tell him the story about Tristan Yolton." And he starts telling me about this guy in Washington State who him and his mother trade what they believe to be the Sasquatch. And they put out a peanut butter jar one night. And when the Sasquatch showed up and started eating the peanut butter, he started purring. Like it was like a hum, but they caught on record. It sounded like a purr. And he goes, "Chris, guess what frequency that purr, that hum was?" I said, Dave, if you're going to tell me it was 40 hertz, I'm going to lose my brain right now. He goes, it's 40 hertz, Chris. So we put it out across America and told people, you call us, you know, email us if you have a recording of anything that sounds like the hummingbird in your area, because no one would even put one and one together of hearing a hummingbird at night until now. We started getting recordings from North Carolina, from the Sierra Mountains, from Texas, of this hum that was coming out of the forest. So we were cataloging all these sounds and but giving them to David, and David would run them through all the programs that he runs his stuff through, and they're all coming back, Dave, 40 hertz.
Wow.
So does a Sasquatch hum in a 40 hertz hum? We don't know. But it's been picked up in your field too, in the paranormal field, a hum that's coming in at 40 hertz. There's something about the 40 hertz. So that's what the hum project actually involves.
So do you believe then that the 40 hertz brings them in, or do you believe that it is repellent and bothersome to them? That's why they don't like it.
Right. So everybody has different opinions. Everybody has their own. My opinion is the little ones. They make that hum.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's under our ears. So if they hum and their parents can hear them from, you know, a quarter mile away or whatever, they got, you know, they have great abilities. They're super sensitive to everything. If they make that hum and your parent shows up and thinks that your child's in distress because it's humming or it's making that noise to bring you in there, and you get there and you don't see it, you're going to get mad. You know, that you brought him all the way here for no reason. And that's what the hummingbirds, you know, if they're doing that flutter and they're hearing that 40 hertz and they brings them all the way into those feeders every night, what do you think they're going to do? They want to get rid of those hummingbirds. So they're going to break those feeders, break them up, pour them out so they don't come around anymore if they're in the area.
My first thought, Chris, was when you said that the hummingbird feeders were emptied, is that's like a sugar water that hummingbirds eat. Could it be that it's like a Kool-Aid to the Bigfoot, that they are coming to drink it?
Right, right. Yeah, you could be 100% right. And in this field, nobody's right. You know, nobody's correct. You know, you can only assume and go with your evidence, like I said, like you said at the beginning. You can only go where your evidence brings you and make your own theories and your own hypothesis about what's going out there. So, they could have been drinking it. They could have been pouring out. It was my wife that was, you know, examining this stuff. And afterwards, that chopper showed up the day after that she got her flowers back, and we never had the Sasquatch activity here again. So, that's a whole nother story for another day, but.
Well, that brings an interesting element to the investigative aspect of this as well, that if they are drinking from these, feeders, most of them are kind of glass. It'd be interesting to see if we looked at it, identified it. Are there fingerprints? Are there lip prints? Are they leaving biologics on the bird feeder itself that we might be able to take in to have tested to see what is affecting this and effectively get some DNA that might point us in a direction? Bear, coyote on its hind legs, you know, what is it that's doing this? That's a really fascinating element to the story. And we've got about 30 seconds left, but I'm just curious. Can you tell me around what area you live?
I live in Northwest Connecticut on the border of Massachusetts and New York, right in that corner of Connecticut. That's the area I live in.
It's always so funny to me that I hear Pennsylvania and Connecticut and places like that that have Bigfoot activity, because you would think in states like that would not be the case. But people forget how big these states are, and in some instances, how vast the wilderness is around it. Chris Reinhart, our guest this evening, Real American Monsters, his program. We're going to talk a little bit more about that when we return to the Paranormal 360. Welcome back to the program. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, your host to the strange and unusual every Sunday night. You can tune in and check out the programs for yourself. And if you've missed any one of them, you can also find the podcast version wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Just look up Paranormal 360. Tonight, monsters are real, and Chris Reinhart is here to talk to us a little bit about this. Chris, how close have you ever gotten to a Sasquatch, a Bigfoot?
Okay, my first experience that made me a knower, and not, I've always believed them ever since I was a little kid. I was fascinated with Patty. You'd see the pictures in the Guinness World Record book, and then you'd see glimpses.
And Patty, just for our listeners that are not in the know, is the Patterson-Gimlin footage, the famous footage people have seen of Bigfoot walking from the water's edge into the woods. Please continue.
Yeah, good. Thank you for helping me out there. I'm so used to just calling her Patty. It just, you don't think of that end of it. But yeah, so ever since I was little, I was always fascinated with the Sasquatch. And, oh, jeepers, I lost my train of thought now.
Well, we were talking about kind of your first experience that took you from just a believer to an experiencer.
All right. So I was talking about being a knower. That's where I lost. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm a little nervous being on the show. This is Dave. I've always been a big fan of Dave, so I'm kind of like a little starstruck here too. So
thank you. I appreciate that. Just take a deep breath. I'm just like you. I put my pants on one leg at a time and I drink from hummingbird feeders.
Gotcha. So as I was a youngster and growing up, I always believed in Sasquatch, and I decided 10 years ago to start looking into the phenomenon. And I was involved in a project down in the Ozark Mountains in Missouri. And the first camping trip I ever went down there, we actually found prints alongside of the creek bed, and one after the other. And, you know, I said, okay, now I've seen footprints. I never saw them up here when I was looking around. And then that night we caught him on FLIR camera. We caught one poking up over a log and moving his head real quickly and then poking back down. I mean, in a blink of an eye, these things up and down. And then I'm like thinking, I'm like, wow, okay, nice. See this on FLIR. What's really going on here? And then things start to, you know, you're starting to think that these could be right there. So that night we got back to the campsite and I'm laying in the tent, and to make a long story short, I listened to one walk 15 minutes up to the side of the tent, and his last footfall, I don't know if it was a he or she, last footfall is right by the side of my head. And we had the rain gear off that night. And I knew if I looked up at that moment in time, I could see whatever was there, and I couldn't do it. I could not bring myself after the footprints and seeing it. I just couldn't do it. I listened to him step by step, not Godzilla steps, like heel to toe, crunch. Crunch all, and then that final footfall right by my head. I couldn't do it. And all of a sudden, I don't know, after he stood there for maybe 5 minutes, he comes down, and all of a sudden on the side of my face, just like that. And look at my hair and my arm just stick straight up in the air, just bringing that back. And I felt the breath of whatever was on the outside of the tent on the side of my face. And then after that whole experience that weekend, that's when I became a knower. So that I've been within what I believe 5 inches of a Sasquatch face to face without being able to see it, obviously. But
you, and a lot of people are like, oh, that's crazy. When you're in a vulnerable situation and position, and suddenly the thing that you've had this awe and kind of just this sense of marvel over has approached you and is within inches of you. Again, we don't really know what this being is or what it's truly capable of. We have heard many different stories. Is this about to get violent? Is it about to just, you know, sniff things out and leave? I can completely understand the fear of just keeping your eyes closed and not wanting to move. There are claims though, Chris, that these beings are telepathic in a sense, and that they can affect us. They can stir up our fear. They can almost speak to us in our own mind. Have you ever had something that profound happen to you as well?
Okay. So I have to say yes. And that's happened to me 3 times since I've been doing this, and it happened here at the house. And it happened during the hummingbird stuff that was going on. Like I said, I was, like you said at the beginning, I was trading with these guys for 6 years. And trading means you pick a spot in the forest and you leave things, and they would come and they would take them, and they would leave us feathers and rocks and stones like that. And one occasion, we would hang a monkey in a tree. They took the monkey, and a year later, they brought it back the same week, which is pretty wild. I still have all that stuff. And at the beginning, I thought these guys were flesh and blood until I had an experience in the Florida swamp. And I'll tell that story after this, and it'll blow your guys' mind. That changed my whole attitude towards them. And
so you've got this toy that you left for it, and it returns it a year later. You know, again, just please excuse my ignorance on this, but do you brush it looking for hair, looking for any kind of physical evidence left behind? And what did you uncover?
Yeah. I sent it away, and the people that were looking at it never got back to me. But after you figured after something would disappear, even if it was in the forest and it was picked up by an animal and dropped, it would have never came back anyways. And I'm just giving everybody the questions that I've been hit with, and it just wouldn't happen that way. And so it came back, and there was only one little tear in it, Dave. It didn't look like it weather ever touched it. It was well taken care of. This thing was in some, it was inside somewhere. Where it was, I can't tell you what it was. I don't know who had it, what had it. We can only assume what was going on at that place at that time that the Sasquatch were taking it. Again, we didn't see what took it, so we can't explain that.
Was there any hair follicles, anything in it that you would be able to, you said you sent it in for testing. When you send it somewhere to be tested, do you tell them, I want you to check this for known attributes of animals, or do you tell them, I think we may have encountered a Bigfoot?
Well, the testing area that I was sending to, she was told that it was, you know, that's why I wanted it. It was a friend of a friend, so she knew what it was for. And but I still can't to this day get back a hold of her. So I don't know what happened to it. But we've had other samples. Actually, Doug is doing a big project right now, and he has a lot of hair samples that are going out and being tested right now. Even a blood sample that was collected is out being tested right now. So
and Chris is referring to Doug Hijack, who is the producer of Monster Quest, the series, and lives in the beautiful Minnesota Twin Cities area as well. But he has definitely been interested in on the forefront of pushing the boundaries of trying to understand what's going on with these creatures. And, you know, with about a minute left here, minute and a half to go, these beings, do you believe that they are just flesh and blood creatures, humanistic creatures that have always lived amongst us? Or do you think there is something more paranormal about them?
At this point, after everything we've been through and all the evidence I've collected and the EVPs and the weird stuff, I'll tell you in the next segment about the Florida situation, what changed my mind. I believe they're interdimensional. I believe they're on the other side of the veil. I believe that they can come and go. They leave an oily residue when they leave, come back. It's been tested. It's radioactive. So I think that they're coming back and forth. That way,
if it's radioactive, you would think then actively in the field using a Geiger counter, you might be able to identify when they're in your presence.
Yeah, I use an RF meter now. I use a lot of ghost hunting equipment when in our investigations now. Yes, because it works. I've had RF readings that a satellite communication guy reached out to us. I'll tell you real quick. I said if we were in a Faraday box, we would have been cooked alive. He says, there's no way you guys should have been getting readings like while having stones thrown at us.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. Chris Reinhardt has more stories, and let's hear about this Florida experience. We'll do that next on the Paranormal 360. Have you ever had an encounter with a Bigfoot, a Sasquatch, a creature that defies the logic of our known existence? Then email me, dave@paranormal60.com. That's dave@paranormal60.com. I'd love to hear your stories, and we may share them on an upcoming episode. But tell me where, when, and how it happened to you. What took you from a casual observer and believer to a knower, an experiencer? We'd love to hear from you. Chris Reinhardt, my guest this evening, Real American Monsters, the name of his program. Let's talk about this a little bit deeper. You teased it in the last segment. You had an experience in Florida that really altered the way that you think and process this information. Talk us through that.
So I was invited down by a guy named Chris Connor, and his outfit's called the Trail to Bigfoot. And he invited me down to do an expedition in the Green Swamp in Florida. And he's the one that started using the RF meters, EMF, RF meters in the swamp. And I never used one before this and never thought of using one before this, but he was a big follower of this, what was going on at the Skinwalker Ranch, and he said, put one and one together and said, why not try it? So he invited me down. We're out the first day in the Green Swamp, and we get to his area that he calls the fridge, and we start having stones thrown at us, and they're coming up from on top of the trees, and they're just bouncing off and coming down, and that's what Sasquatch are reported to do. Again, we're not seeing what's doing it, but there's something throwing stones at us. So he takes out his RF meter, and the RF meter gets pegged. It goes to 1-... and it's beeping, beep, and it's just beeping, and we're having stones thrown at us, and it gradually progresses, and continues for a while, and then it all ends. And then we get back and we're scratching our heads about the RF meter. And we actually contacted the makers of the meter, and we said, what does 1... mean? And they finally came back and told us the meter doesn't go any higher. And they're like, where are you getting these readings? And you're not supposed to be getting those readings. Where are you guys getting? And tell them in the middle of the green swamp, they'll never answer you again.
Right.
You're not supposed to be getting them. So the following day, he brings me to another area. We bring back the RF meter. And on the way in, we found out afterwards, I fell into a creek. And all of a sudden, we hear a voice on EVP goes, hey, look, it's Chris. In a southern draw. Now, they could either be talking about Chris Connor or myself, but I was the one that fell in the creek. They would have never known my name. So, very interesting. And he goes, I can ask for Knox. Now, Sasquatch are also known like...
Now, wait, are you saying that a Sasquatch, you believe, spoke?
I got an EVP. I can't tell you what spoke, but it knew our names. It was intelligent.
Wow.
In a southern draw. Hey, look, it's Chris.
Okay.
You can see that on my channel. There's an interview that I did on there, and you guys can hear it all. It's all right there. Everything I mostly tell you, you can see on my channel. So he goes, in this area, I can ask for a knock and get one usually. He calls it Knox Creek. And I've just found on the paranormal world, that's pretty common too, to get Knox, to ask for Knox in communication. And so who knows what's going on out in the forest. So he asks and he gets a knock, and we're both like, whoa, that's pretty cool. I said, I couldn't believe it, but it happened. And then his phone starts going wacko in his pocket, and he takes it out, and there's something that's scanning his phone. Now, he has a pretty important job. They're trying to break into his work codes and his bank account, and his phone is just going haywire. And it stops after, I don't know, 10 minutes, and he goes, what's your phone? And I just got my phone 2 weeks prior to this trip. And my wife had the phone number. Chris had the phone number. Another guy that I was meeting down there had my new number. And I look at it, and there's a text, me typing out to somebody. It was MBBC, 21 lines of MBBC. So you figure, what? Butt dial in your pocket. Numbers get pressed, unlocked. So we erased everything but 11 lines and then just filmed the last 11 just in case it was some kind of Morse code. So got back to his house, took a shower, got out of the shower, look at my phone, see if my wife got a hold of me. And I looked down at my text messages and what's back? MBBC again, line after line. But now there's capital letters, explanation points, periods, everything, but MBBC is all in there. So I bring it out to Chris. I'm like, Chris, look what's back. He goes, holy cow, what is that? Some kind of Morse code we picked up signal or something? And we bring his wife over because we couldn't figure out. She goes, we're like, look at this. What do you think this is? This is a message we get out in the swamp today and here at the house. She goes, I know exactly what that is. And me and Chris look at each other. We're like, all right, we've been scratching our head for hours. Let's hear what she's got to say. And she comes out and she goes, it's easy. She goes, Mark, Betty, Beata, and Chris, the first four initials of the four people that have been in the green swamp searching for the Sasquatch for the last 10 years. My head just went, boom.
Right. And
you got to be kidding me. You're right, Beata. Beata, Betty, that's Chris's sister. Beata is his wife, and Mark was his partner at the time. Four of them, first four initials. So now I'm like, oh my God, what is going on? 2 weeks later, I come back to Connecticut. I have a guy come down from Massachusetts. He's going to one of my areas. He wants to see if we can get going what we usually have going. So we get up to this area and we're going up the mountain. Guess what? He pulls out his phone and his phone starts going haywire. Crazy. Shuffling through videos. Now they're playing YouTube videos. His phone was locked. So now his phone's going crazy. He puts it back in his pocket. We get to the top of the mountain. We're just sitting there eating lunch. And I get up. I do a live Facebook for my group. And I bench. There's a fake fireplace up there that nobody ever burns for. If you know Sasquatch, they're known to make fake fire pits just to make think that there's somebody else in the area. Some kind of a distraction, I guess. I go down to point. I point at the fire pit and a rock comes flying and shoo, boom, hits the thing. And everybody behind me go, oh my God, we seen that. What was that? And there was like 10 people watching live. They're like, oh, we seen that rock come in. I'm like, that was pretty cool. So I stand up and now all of a sudden the rocks start coming in from the north side, the south side, the east side. There's rock. We got three of them around us. Whatever there is in the forest is throwing stones at us. And my guy on that team goes, take out the RF meter, because I bought one. As soon as I got back, I bought one after the swamp stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I took it out, and then that thing was pegged for 15 minutes. B1... Again, just like Florida, now we're 1,000 miles away in the hills of Connecticut, and this thing is just screaming. And that's when the satellite communication guy got a hold of me and he said, listen, I did research on your meters. It's a broadband meter. There's no way you guys should be experiencing anything over 16 point and above on those meters. There's nothing in that woods that will trip that like that. And we were topped out, like screaming topped out for 15 minutes.
So, now that you know that, do you have a fear? And again, I know we only have a minute here, but do you have a fear that, you're putting yourself in harm's way for radiation poisoning or sickness?
So I just interviewed a guy. That's funny you mentioned. I just interviewed this guy, and he had these, and I was on his show first, and he told me about this incident he had because he heard about my stuff that with the eyes that I had going on, and he had these burns on his leg, and he went to the emergency room. I was out Bigfoot, and the doctor at the emergency room told him, hey, you know what? Those look like radiation burns on his leg. So I don't know what's going on there, but I advise people now to take an RF meter. I carry a Geiger counter with me now when I go out. Again, this is just what happens to me. I am not the Bigfoot guru or the Sasquatch right. guru telling you folks this is what's going to happen or what. I'm just sharing my experiences.
Well, and this sounds very familiar with a lot of alien encounters as well. So maybe we are dealing with things that are more interdimensional in nature. There's a flashback between the way they travel and that radiation is part of them and part of the atmosphere and surrounding area because of where they come and go on a more regular basis. Definitely something to think about. Rocks being thrown at you, things coming close to you. Is this an intimidation factor? Is this just letting you know that you're in their area? Let's talk about that next on the Paranormal 360. Monsters are real. We're hearing some really amazing stories from Chris Reinhardt, personal firsthand accounts, strange things that have happened. We'll have to have Chris back in the future to talk more about this. Maybe you, the listeners, can share your stories with us as well. All right, Chris, rocks being thrown at you. We hear that a lot when we hear about these Bigfoot encounters. Do you believe that they are just warning you, or is this kind of their echolocation to let you know you're in their territory now? Or are they trying to hurt you? Are they the stormtroopers of the wilderness? They're just really bad at hitting things that they aim for. What do you think is going on?
Yeah, I don't think that they're out to hurt anybody. Now, that's just my opinion. I think they use rocks as tools. It's tactical. When we were at that place in the Ozark Mountains, we would leave the campsite and we would leave recorders going and we would hear rocks falling, coming through the trees, landing by the tents. And they were checking to see if anybody was there. They're trying to get a reaction to know how close they can come in. Because if they could figure nobody was going to be there, they came and they took stuff out of the coolers. We have recordings of them opening the coolers and taking coffees out. That's another story.
I know a lot of people are going to want to know, why aren't you using like those fiber cable cameras that you could stick out through the tent that you can keep an eye on it? Or I know that trail cameras seem to emit something that the Bigfoot notice and they're able to kind of maneuver around and stay outside of that visual lens a lot of times. But are there no other ways to visually document what's going on with these creatures when you can hear them in that close proximity?
Right. So I know for a fact there's really good footage out there, and I know for a fact that they're not going to share it. They're not going to show it. They just don't want it. They just want it for their own personal. They've been caught on camera. I think it's the IR. I think they can see it. You know, even in Apple phones now, if you looked at that at night and through security cameras, they flash. Their IRs are always flashing on the Apple phone. So I think they can see that. They have super sight at night. I mean, we were sitting on a ridge in the Ozark Mountains, and we were watching one walk in back of us on FLIR camera. We had it up over our shoulder on a stick. And this guy was walking back and forth through, and he looked like he was confused, didn't know what to do. He thought we could see him, but it was pitch dark, 2 o'clock in the morning, pitch dark. The guy that was next to me turned around to get something out of his backpack. That Sasquatch or whatever was walking between those trees jumped right behind a tree and started peeking at us. He thought we could see him. And there's no way. He was like 50, 60 yards in back of us. We couldn't see him, but that's how good they could see because it was pitch dark. So imagine
you from approaching them then when you could see them looking at you from behind a tree. Why not start walking towards the tree?
Well, would you go towards the tree in the middle of the Ozark Mountains at 2 o'clock in the morning, knowing that there's a creature that you don't know that's walking behind it?
You're out there putting yourself in that position, looking for this. I'm just always curious. It's been kind of a running joke for me for 20 years when I talk to Bigfooters. What's the goal? And if you encounter one, do you have a net? Are you going to shoot? Are you going to, bow in submission? What is the overall plan? And it seems funny that a lot of investigators are like, I don't know.
All right. No, you're right. I had never even thought of it like that. But, most Bigfooters do it. You know what they do it for? It's for the interaction.
Right.
They're having that experience. They're
but
having.
Many are afraid to approach it. They're having the experience, but don't want to approach. I'm not an outdoors guy. So I totally get it. And I don't know enough about what animals are supposed to be out there that with my luck, I'd go running up on it. And it's a, 9 foot tall grizzly bear who's looking for a big bald McRib sandwich. Right. And I put myself in harm's way. So I understand that. But I also feel like, it's like when I go into haunted locations, people tell me, aren't you afraid? No, I mean, obviously I'm unnerved, but I'm there to have this experience. I want to go towards it to see what there is.
Right. Well, I don't know how to explain that to you. I was afraid of the dark after my first experience for a long time. I mean, he right inside of my face. It took me 7 years, honest to God, Dave, to get over that at night. I still went. My wife couldn't understand. She's like, you can't stand the night. You can't do it. Why you keep on doing it? I said, because I'm out there to try and get the answers to figure out what's going on. But now I know that, there's just something else up with these guys. And again, who knows if you see them on FLIR camera, you walk up to them. Are they going to be there? What's going to be there? You don't know what's going to be right there. It could be invisible.
It's like the predator. You're seeing their right. energetic sign. You may get within feet of them and not see them because they are blending into their natural territory.
Right. There's a lady, Barb Shoup, in Washington State, who actually caught one on tape. In that mode, in that mirrored mode, and it's been investigated by a lot of people. And recently, the guy from Predator, the guy that did the special effects, said there's no way in the world she could have faked the cameras she was using anything other than what it was. What it was 100% real, whatever she caught.
I've got about a minute left. If people are interested in following your work, seeing what you've got, the evidence you've collected, your own stories, where is the best place for them to go, Chris?
Okay, so YouTube, I'm Real American Monsters. My podcast is on the Untold Radio Network, and that's Doug Hychek from Monster Quest's station. And those are the two best places you can get me. I'm going to be starting a lot of new on-the-road documentaries this year. We just got done filming one here in my hometown of Winsted. It's going to be called The Winsted Wildman. We just caught, vocalizations of 3 Sasquatch in the Northwest Connecticut Hills. 3 of them screaming at the top of their lungs. It's amazing, amazing vocals. And they've been vetted by David Ellis from the Olympic Project and others. And we're using that new programs to dig them out. And it's pretty interesting. So yeah, and that'll be on my channel on Real American Monsters also.
That to me seems like it would be much more terrifying than seeing something, is to hear those screams and those howls. Because when you do hear some of that audio, it's absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, for sure. I'll send it to you after, but I can't release it yet, guys. I would play it for you right now. It's just, it's really incredible. And we caught, they call it samurai chatter.
And, right.
I'll look forward to that.
We'll have Chris back in the future again. When you spend long enough listening to people like Chris, you start to realize that the line between folklore and fact, it really isn't a line at all. It's a blindfold that we seem to pull tight because the truth is too big, sometimes just too strange, and oftentimes just too close for comfort. The forests are whispering, the skies are flickering, and then there are those nights when the darkness itself seems to be living, breathing entity all of its own. And every once in a while, if we're lucky, something steps out that reminds us we're not alone on this continent. And We never have been. I hope our tonight's conversation nudged that door open just a little bit wider for you. And maybe, just maybe, the next time you hear a branch snap with the unmistakable weight of something big watching you, you'll remember what Chris told us tonight. Monsters are real, and America is full of them. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360.